Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
The person who makes the claim bears the burden. Not the Christian. It's not the Christian's job to disprove their claim, not first.
Greg Kokel speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The first step is to gather information with some form of the question, what do you mean by that? The second step is to reverse the burden of proof when the other person is making the claim with some form of the question, how did you come to that conclusion? And now this gives them a chance to give you a point of view with reasons in favor of it. Until they do that, you have nothing really to speak to because they haven't made a case of any kind. They just emoted.
You can watch and listen to Greg Kokel's presentation, Making the Case for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, on a recording of the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. For a $250 tax-deductible gift, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast. Order today at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's time to go through some listener email. We get a lot of email. We do not have time to respond to all of it, but we do occasionally have an opportunity to go through the email, pick some of the best out there, and to answer it on the air. The email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Now, the Issues Etc. comment line is still not operational. We discovered that these digital fiber optic phone lines, whatever you want to call them, that we had put in the new studios, does not have voicemail.
So we're going to put in a conventional line, correct?
Yes. We always have a backup, so we're getting an AT&T line like we had at the old studio. So the it's supposed to be installed on September 9th. So for all you people calling or attempting to call the Issues, etc., comment line. I apologize. We apologize for the inconvenience.
It'll be back up soon.
Same phone number, apparently. 618-223-8382. Here's an email from Jonathan. It's responding to last week's interview with Dr. John Pless, part one on A Lutheran Perspective on a Pandemic. Jonathan writes, does Dr. John Pless believe that if the state forbids Christians to gather together physically for the divine service, that those Christians should obey those governing authorities? Does he believe that a state can declare an emergency at any time for whatever reason and thereby prohibit the worship of God? Does Dr. Pless believe that Hebrews 10:25 is abrogated by any so-called emergency? Dr. Pless's attitude greatly upsets me. He seemed not to have any ability to criticize the acceptability of the government's actions. Has he no ability to say that those funeral restrictions were irrational and hypocritical? Has he no sympathy for the flock? It seems that his position was far more fatalistic than whatever attitude he was trying to condemn as anti-faith. It's horribly fatalistic to say that everything the government says is trustworthy and true, and that everything the media represents is accurate. I'm sorry, but I thought some of your fatalism discussion was a huge red herring. I don't see or hear anyone going around talking about fatalistic superstitions regarding the year 2020. Thanks for the feedback, and thanks for listening, Jonathan.
Well, I think that Dr. Pless mentioned in passing the restrictions on worship. We were not having a conversation on the wisdom, the prudence, or even the legality of restrictions on worship. We were actually having a conversation about what does a Christian do when there are restrictions, and how do you respond to that? I think Dr. Pless did a fantastic job of answering those questions. First of all, I think you've misunderstood the point of the conversation. The point of the conversation was, if we can discuss, and I have no idea what Dr. Pless believes about the restrictions on worship. I believe he lives in Fort Wayne. They went under restrictions. I have no idea what he believes about it, and I'm sure he probably holds his own opinions. So I think you're reading way too much into him mentioning these things in passing. He was answering a different question, and that was really about how does a Christian respond when we can't gather together for whatever reason. Now, I did ask a question about this 2020 fatalism, and I'm going to stand by the question, because, and it wasn't a red herring. There is a kind of superstition about 2020, isn't there? You hear people say, why did this bad thing happen? Why did this weird thing happen? Well, it's 2020. Like the year has some sort of a power to do this to us, or it has some sort of a special significance that bad or weird things happened during 2020. If you recall, back in 2016, another election year, by the way, there was the similar kind of 2016 superstition. A hurricane, well, it's 2016. A tornado, well, it's 2016. And you could toss anything into the 2016 superstition or fatalism that you wanted to, and somehow it made sense because it was 2016. And the same thing is happening in spades during 2020. Now, sometimes it's just a joke, but I think it has become more than a joke with some people. It's become a genuine explanatory narrative that 2020 has a special power to mess the world up. When it doesn't, it's just a number. This year is no different than any other year. Yes, have a lot of strange things happened, but our marking of time is completely arbitrary. Better to take God's perspective on these things, that eternal perspective, and when these things happen, rather than saying, well, it's 2020, or what else is 2020 going to throw at us? We repent and we seek deliverance from the only one who can give it, and it's not the government, it is God himself.
That's a good time to remind our listeners again, the three commandments in play.
Oh, absolutely.
During a pandemic.
Yeah, and especially with regard to worship restrictions, the Ten Commandments are always in play, and they are never in conflict with one another. And the three commandments that are in play here in this particular situation of worship restrictions are the commandment regarding hallowing the Sabbath day, and that is to not despise God's preaching, but to gladly hear and learn. That includes the sacraments too. The other commandment is the fourth, that is to obey authorities, honor your father and mother, and that extends to governing authorities. And the third commandment that's in play is the fifth commandment against murder or doing unnecessary harm to your neighbor. So those three commandments can all be obeyed by a Christian during a pandemic. It's not as though one of them has to get suspended or any of them have to get suspended. They are in perfect harmony with one another. So the government says you can only gather in groups of 25. That's the current Illinois restrictions that we're still living under. Well, that means that the church has to find a way of gathering people within those restrictions and obey that governing authority. You may hate the law. You may think it's irrational. You may think it's stupid. You may think that it's based upon a conspiracy theory. You may think anything you want to about it, but if they allow you to gather in groups of 25, you gather in groups of 25. And you work around that problem. Now, if they were to say you cannot worship, period, that's an entirely different thing. But we're not in that position. I don't know that anybody has been in that position where they said you cannot worship at all. There's always been a little window there. You may hate those restrictions. You may fear that it is government overreach. You may think that it's government overreach, but you still have the obligation to obey governing authorities insofar as you can without committing sin or violating the other commandments. So those are always in play. To hear God's preaching, to obey governing authorities, and to do no harm to your neighbor. When we come back, we'll go through a little more email, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house. A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Every knee will bow then. Every tongue will confess the things you already say and sing here in his congregation.
Morning Chapel from Cramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
And peace will be as it is even this day upon you, the Israel of God. Amen.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email on this Monday, August the 24th. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Gordon listens and resides in Austin, Texas, and he writes, I have a huge problem with the evidently general advice, vote based on the platform and policies and not on the person. To my mind, it should be quite the opposite. The whole purpose of voting for a representative or a president or elected representative in the executive branch is to give the person agency, given that we don't know all the issues that will come up and given that we don't have expertise in all the workings of government. Of course, issues matter too, no argument. But I think character has to have something to do with how we should choose candidates. Frankly, BLM, CRT, intersectionality, the recent move of the Austin City Council to defund our police department by one-third, the push for socialism, the riots, the homeless encampments, and all the rest pushed me in the direction of voting for Trump. But then after hearing Miss Marjorie Dannenfelser on your show, I realized again, no, character does matter. Now, I don't mean that they have to show signs of being a Christian. I simply mean that they have to show a certain stability of character and temperament. I don't know whether Margaret Thatcher or Winston Churchill were Christians, but they had the character and temperament. Ronald Reagan had, in general, the character and temperament. Thanks for reading, and thank you for the email, Gordon in Austin.
Well, I tend to agree with you when it comes to all of the things being equal. Character is a very important quality to have in our leaders. It's also one that is extraordinarily rare. We have a tendency in the United States to elect people who, and maybe it's something about what it takes to rise to that level of political prowess, who have enormous character flaws. I can't think of a president in my memory that hasn't had, with the possible exception of Ronald Reagan. You never got to kind of see Ronald Reagan as he was.
As far as candidate, Mitt Romney.
Well, Mitt Romney, if you want character. But I cannot think one that does not have serious character flaws at some level. Now, and I will readily admit that President Trump has many character flaws at many levels. I think even his most ardent supporters would probably say, yes, he is a very flawed character. So I tend to agree with you when it comes to all of the things being equal. Character really does count. But all of the things are not equal. We have a man who is running against President Trump who appears to have, if you discount accusations against him and put the best construction on it, he appears to have a very affable manner. His character seems to be pretty decent. He's an honest-spoken guy for the most part. Yes, he has allowed himself to be led down the garden path, the left wing of his party. But again, isn't that kind of profoundly flawed character that we find in President Trump. And I know the listeners are going to find that offensive. I really like the way Scott Klusendorf approaches this when it comes to kind of the practicality, the pragmatism of politics. Remember, politics is the art of the possible, not of achieving the perfect end. And he has the analogy, if there's a house on fire and children are in there and they can be rescued, and you have one guy there who is unwilling to help you rescue these children, but he's the nicest guy in the world. And he's well-spoken. And then you have the other neighbor there who routinely is yelling at people to get off his yard and who is a loudmouth and he's a bore and he's an egomaniac and he's constant trouble, but he's willing to go into that burning building with you to rescue those children. Whose help are you going to take? Are you standing on the sidewalk with the guy who won't help you? Now, you say that seems an extreme analogy, a burning building with children. That's precisely what we have when it comes to the life issue. There are lives at stake. So in terms of just the pragmatic approach, I think, and I hate to have to say it, but I do have to say it because this is the reality we live in. The Christian has to take the help of someone whose character is deeply flawed. You would otherwise not want to have anything to do with if they're willing to help you in the saving of lives. And no matter how nice and well-built the character of the other guy, if he's not willing to help you do that, then he's not the guy you're cooperating with.
This email comes from Chris. It's in regards to not something we said on the show, but a mass email we sent out announcing seeking contributions for our new studios and offices. And it was a postscript that was written like this. It's a postscript that read, "We would consider studio naming rights for contributions of $50,000 or more." Now here's Chris's email. "Dear Issues, etc. To say I was saddened by your postscript in this email is an understatement. You would consider studio naming rights for a contribution of over $50,000? Please stop with the glorification of the human and the glorification of the dollar. I understand you survive on donations, but that doesn't mean you have to glorify the act of the donor by agreeing to name something after someone that is just like the rest of us, human and unworthy of God's grace. Place your trust in the Lord and trust that He will deliver. Please consider removing that statement in future mailings, asking for donations to continue the Lord's work. Thanks for letting me vent. Thanks for the feedback, Chris."
Well, Chris, I look at it differently. I don't consider naming rights for the studio to be a way of glorifying the human or the dollar. I consider it a way to thank someone who is both willing and able to be that generous. So we learned early on here on Issues, Etc., when we knew that this show could be self-supporting, that we never had that question in our mind. But we didn't know anything about raising money. Jeff was a radio producer and I was a parish pastor turned radio host, so we knew nothing about raising money. We had a flight out to California for some unrelated reason with a good friend, and he actually knew something about raising money. And he said something to me that has always stuck with me. He says, "Because Christians know that they live entirely on the generosity of God through Jesus Christ, Christians are the most generous people in the world." And I truly, truly believe this. Christians are the most generous people in the world. But he said, sometimes they're just waiting to be asked. And they're not sitting there with their hands folded saying, "I'm waiting for you to ask me." But sometimes they don't know the need. They're waiting to hear what the need is so that they can provide for that in their generosity. And so that's the spirit in which we wrote that P.S. for that letter about the new studios and the offices, was we know that Christians are the most generous people in the world. It doesn't hurt to ask. If we ask for a gift of $50,000, who knows? Maybe someone is able to do that and will be willing to do that. And we'd like to thank them by allowing them to name the studio if they're willing and able to be that generous. It's a thanks, not a glorification of that person.
I think in hindsight, naming rights does sound kind of corporatese. You know what I'm saying? If you want to name where the Blues hockey play, what's that? Enterprise. That's Greg. Sorry about your Blues. In my Blues, I follow the Blues. I'm a front runner. If they do well, like go Blues, Stanley Cup champions. But they got eliminated first round, so who cares? Thanks, Craig. The Enterprise Center. I think we probably could have worded that better. Naming rights, in hindsight.
If you would like to give a gift in memoriam of someone or attach a name to it or something like that, then there would have been a way to say it. But so we don't know anything about fundraising. Everything we learned from one guy on a four-hour flight out to San Francisco.
But let's talk about good news. We're almost at $100,000. We have a match of $200,000 for the new studios and offices. We've already got commitments of about $100,000. We need $175,000. The total project's about $375,000. And we thanks to everyone who's supported us or pledged so far to help us reach that goal of $375,000. And you can do so, find out more. You can see an architect's rendering of the new studios and offices at issuesetc.org, as well as make a secure online contribution there. Or you can give us a call, 618-223-8385. Again, thanks to a generous donor, we'll match dollar for dollar up to $200,000 for our new studios and offices.
And one of these days, we'll be all moved in and have everything put away, and it will look like we actually are professionals. And we'll invite our listeners to come out for an open house so they can see the new offices and the studios. That's a little ways away. We still have a lot of housekeeping to do. When we come back, a little bit more listener email.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email for a few more minutes. Then we'll be remembering, along with the rest of the church, Bartholomew, also known as Nathaniel. Pastor David Peterson of Gottesdienst will be our guest.
Paul writes, and this is in regards to your recent interview with Tim Gagline on the U.S. Senate report, The Decline of the Happy Two-Parent Home. Paul writes, while I appreciate Tim's report, I get very frustrated listening to things like this, as well as the host's questions. Come on, folks, you and I both know that this isn't just happening. It's not a result of decline, even spiritual decline, although these play a part. The decline in the family in the U.S. is due in large part to deliberate enemy action on the part of the left. Just read Black Lives Matter's website, where they deliberately target the nuclear family and traditional sexuality. Prior to the New Deal, the black family in the U.S. was strong. After Truman's and especially LBJ's promotion of welfare that wouldn't pay if there was a father in the home, the number of black fathers dropped significantly. I'm afraid that I get the feeling that the churches, even the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is taking the position that the end is near. We'll just sit back and wait for Jesus to come. How about this? At the next Issues Etc. conference, we take on the topic, what do we do about the situation? You featured author after author describing how bad the situation is, but only Rod Dreher and the Benedict option has come close to suggesting a course of action. Thanks for listening, Paul.
Well, and yeah, Rod Dreher was actually speaker at one of our conferences after he had written the Benedict option. He actually made the case for the Benedict option. So I completely agree with you that this notion that somehow the end is near and we just kind of sit back and let it happen, it is very popular among Lutherans, not here at Issues Etc. We spend a lot of time talking, just to mention a few other conference guests, Anthony Esselin, suggesting a way forward also. Ryan Anderson, he was another speaker at one of our conferences.
Matt Walsh and this year, Katie Faust, Mark and Molly Hemingway.
So everyone was offering solutions in terms of our conference speakers, along with the diagnosis. You got to get the diagnosis right. And I think you did get the diagnosis right. This has been a concerted, decades-long effort to undermine the family. I don't know if it started out as an attempt to undermine the family, but at least in terms of the progressive agenda, it has definitely become the goal to undermine the family. Did everyone who supported no-fault divorce think it was going to destroy the family and rub their hands greedily together saying, aha, finally we now can destroy the family? No. There was a lot of unintended consequences going on there. But I think it's safe to say that there are those, and you mentioned Black Lives Matter and there are other movements, that have as one of their goals to destroy the traditional family. So I completely agree that this isn't just happening. And I don't think Tim Gagelein would disagree at all. He wanted to talk about a spiritual decline, and I think he would include in that spiritual decline all of these specifics that you mentioned.
Dana writes, greetings to you, good people at Issues, etc. I've been listening to the fabulous series Introducing the Books of the Bible with Pastor Wilkin and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. It has been a beautiful, Christ-focused, and edifying journey. I can't say enough about this series. I have listened to all the recordings, some of them twice, ending with James, which seems to be the last one available. It was posted on June 8th. I'm wondering and hoping if the remaining books of the Bible will be presented. Is this in the works? Thanks for listening, Dana.
Yes, it is in the works. I think that Pastor Wolfmiller is taking some time off of non-essential activities that includes appearing here on Issues, etc., after he suffered a bout of what he and his family believe was a pretty nasty case of COVID. He did not end up in the hospital, but he had other physical manifestations of it that were pretty alarming. And so he decided after he started feeling better that he was just going to kind of curtail those extra activities. And when he's feeling up to it and ready to return to the Issues, etc. microphone, we will start that up one more time.
Not soon enough. Ray reminds us, when moving to the new studios and offices, don't forget the bottle opener from the old studio. Ray concludes, old time listener.
Where's the bottle opener?
It was the one that Concordia Publishing House came out with that played A Mighty Fortress. I don't know. Craig?
I don't remember.
Craig had a mic. I mean, anybody would know Craig because Craig spent, it was a kitchenette. Now we have our own kitchen now, a real kitchen. But I don't know where it is. We might have to get a new one. But well, Ray, thanks for the reminder. I forgot about the bottle opener.
I spent the morning going through boxes that had been pulled from my office and then back in the library at the old place. And there was stuff there that I just honestly did not remember that we had, because it's been a long time. And then I was sorting equipment. I realized we'd bought the same unit like three times, having forgotten we'd bought this thing and put it back in the box. So we got three of those things if you need one of those.
Craig's laughing. I'm not even going to go there. Poor, I can't go there because Craig can't defend himself. So I'm not even going to go there. Craig,
okay.
I got your back, buddy. Claudia writes, I've been listening to your podcast for many months and really appreciate the topics, guests, and format. I have learned a lot about pop Christianity culture and appreciate the clear way Issues are presented. Thanks for the feedback, Claudia.
Thank you very much. We're happy to do it.
One final one. Michelle in Wausau, Wisconsin, thank you so very much for putting old-time sacred music on the internet radio. It's so refreshing to hear old-time sacred music on the internet. I listen to your station a lot. Keep up the good work, and I really appreciate what you do for us. She's talking about our 24/7 sacred music station.
LutheranPublicRadio.org. You can also find Lutheran Public Radio on your favorite podcast provider or on the LPR app. You can listen 24/7 to sacred music for the world anytime, anywhere. LutheranPublicRadio.org. When we come back, Pastor David Peterson's going to join us. This day, the church remembers Bartholomew, also known as Nathaniel. Be looking forward to the feast and festival of Bartholomew with Pastor David Peterson, departmental editor of Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy.